The following is a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its owners, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.
Money Talks, the show that gives you the tools to navigate a challenging economy, help you build and protect your wealth, and provide timely news and information to manage your money. Here's the host of Money Talks, Richard Peterson, president of Capital Financial Group on 1590 WAKR.
And good morning, everyone. I am your host, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. This is Money Talks, and thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday morning as we take a look at the markets that were kind of mixed yesterday. The Dow ended down just under 20 points, closed at 20,914. That makes it positive 5.8% year-to-date. The NASDAQ was flat for the day, closed at 5901. And the S&P 500, it lost 3 points, closed at 2378. It is positive 6.2% year-to-date. Looking at the other indicators, we see that natural gas was up 4 cents, closed at $2.94, while the West Texas Intermediate for oil was up 3 cents, closed at $48.78, and the Brent crude was up 2 cents to close at $51.76. If you've noticed over the past couple of weeks, we've seen a decline in the oil prices having to do with really a glut in oil. We have a new field that was found in Alaska that they'll be basically up and running in about 5 years' time. In the meantime, in here in the United States, we have more rigs back up producing again, and certainly there's a glut, which should be soaked up within the next probably 6 to 12 months to get us back on more of an even keel of use and what's being brought out of the ground at this point. So that's the reason why we've seen the little decline. West Texas got up to around $54, $55. It's $48 now, so not too bad. Gas futures were up a penny to $1.59, and at the pumps in the area, it looks like anything from $2.02 to $2.25 for a gallon of regular unleaded. Gold was up $3.10, closed to $1,230.20. Silver was up closed at $17.41, was up 8 cents. The VIX was up 7 cents, closed at $11.28. And in the bond market, we see that the 2-year bond is now at 1.31%, the 10-year at 2.5%, and the 30-year sits at 3.11%. We saw that the initial jobless claims edged down to 241,000 this week, a decrease of 2,000 from the previous week. A separate report from the Commerce Department showed a rebound in new U.S. residential construction in the month of February. The report said housing starts jumped 3% to an annual rate of 1.288 million in February after slumping by 1.9% to a revised figure of 1.25 in January. The Philly Fed since said its diffusion index for general activity fell to 32.8 in March from 43.3 in February, although a positive reading still indicates growth. The pullback by the Philly Fed's index of regional manufacturing activity came after it jumped to its highest level last month in over 30 years. We also saw that the Fed made its decision, raised rates again, another 25 basis points. This is the second time in the last 12 months. As we see the Fed now with Janet Yellen basically saying that she still is looking for another couple of rate hikes this year for a total of 3 that they indicated in December. So at this point, we see everything bump up. Prime rate is up. You're going to see a slow increase in the rates as far as savings accounts and money markets and CDs and so forth. But it's slow. It's slow and it's gradual. And so at least we're moving in the right direction to get some return on our monies that are being saved. So it's going to be interesting to see. The Fed basically indicated that they, unemployment is low. They're seeing job growth. They're seeing the economy seems to be picking up and so forth. And so they felt confident this was their window of opportunity. Had the Fed not raised rates on Wednesday, I think we would have seen a big decline in the markets as they wondered what the Fed knew that they didn't know. So certainly what we saw in the last 4 weeks is we saw a gradual increase in the percentage that the markets were basically betting that the Fed would raise rates, and certainly they did. When's the next one coming? I can't tell you for sure, but certainly Janet Yellen wants to try to get to some normalcy, and hopefully by the end of the year we also get some sort of strategy or game plan of when the Fed decides to shed the $4.1 trillion that they have on their balance sheet. So certainly we'll see what happens with that. We got a good show for you in store today, and we're going to be talking a lot about retirees. We want to look at things basically planning for retirement, some of the money moves to make. We want to look at retirement communities. We want to look at some of the retirement myths. We want to talk about why you still need good credit. So we're going to start today with planning on retiring sometime in the next year or two. You need to plan that transition. As life transitions go, retirement ranks up there among the most challenging, both financially and emotionally. Many decisions carry financial and life planning implications. Should you sell the house and downsize? Will you have enough money to pursue your travel plans and hobbies? And how do you want to spend your time? Set goals. Plan out what you want your retirement to be and determine if you have the funds to make it happen. After a lifetime of work, you may have mixed emotions about retirement. Looking forward to not working, but nervous about leaving your work identity behind. Because retirement can be so stressful, clients begin planning 5 years in advance. If that isn't possible, a one-year time frame can work if you're focused and decisive. Time your Social Security. The decision about when to take Social Security is tricky, especially for couples. There can be a major benefit to delaying the benefits, at least until full retirement age, somewhere between 65 and 67, depending on your year of birth. But some retirees are forced to retire earlier than planned and may take it as early as 62. Know your Social Security benefit at key ages, such as your full retirement age and at age 70, and consider whether it makes sense to wait and receive the much higher benefit available at age 70. Basically, when we look at Social Security, every year you wait is about an 8% increase in your Social Security benefits. 82 seems to be the magic age. If you live longer than 82, then of course you would have wanted to wait longer to receive your Social Security benefits. If you live past age 82, certainly you will have wanted to wait until age 70 to start receiving benefits. If you live less than 82, then you'll want to start receiving benefits earlier. And of course, nobody knows, you know, when their day is. So it's just a matter of trying to figure things out, looking at your personal health, family longevity, medical situations, and the like. But, you know, it's a tough decision. And each family needs to decide which would work better for them, you know. What age are they going to retire? How long are they going to work? What kind of incomes are they going to have, and so forth? You need to plan your Medicare and supplements. After Social Security, enrolling in Medicare is one of the biggest decisions facing retirees. Medicare is complex, and enrollment dates differ depending on which part of Medicare you're enrolling in. Medicare Part A covers the hospitalization as long as you've worked and paid Medicare taxes long enough that coverage is free. Medicare Part B covers medical necessary services such as lab tests and doctor visits. If you're already signed up for Social Security or Railroad Retirement Board benefits before you turn 65, you will automatically begin receiving Part A and Part B at that time. If not, sign up for both 3 months before your 65th birthday. Medicare Part C refers to Medicare Advantage plans under which you receive health care services through a health maintenance organization, or HMO, or a preferred provider organization, a PPO. Medicare Part D is the prescription drug program benefit, and the initial enrollment period for both programs begins in the 3 months before you turn 65, including the month you turn 65, and ends 3 months later. There are exceptions to these dates, which are outlined in the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services tip sheet. You need to create a post-retirement budget. Many people believe their post-retirement expenses will be significantly lower than their pre-retirement expenses, but that isn't always the case. For example, while you won't have to dress up for work, you might be traveling more. And while you probably won't go out to lunch with your former colleagues or clients every day like you did, you may go out to dinner more often. By taking a close look at your current and expected future expenses, you can be better prepared to match your spending with your post-retirement income. Determine how much you will need for general expenses, mortgages, utilities, food, as well as medical expenses and insurance. Keep detailed tracks, records of what you spend before retirement, because that will give you an idea of the expenses that aren't likely to change in retirement, such as food, car repairs, home maintenance, and the like. And to remember always to have money set aside for bigger expenses that come up infrequently, such as the replacement of a roof for major appliances. Pay down all the debts that you can if possible. Debt payments, whether from credit cards, a mortgage, a car loan, or a child's student loan, can burden a post-retirement budget, leaving less room for the kinds of activities that you want to enjoy in retirement. If you still had debt during the year before retirement, pay down as much as you possibly can, at least the debt outside of a mortgage. Entering retirement mortgage-free is ideal if that's possible. Absolutely pay off your mortgage if you're in a position to do so, according to many experts. Dial back the investment risk. Having the market fall 15, 20, 25% the year in which you retire can certainly torpedo the best laid plans. Make sure that you have a well-diversified portfolio, one that can manage through a time of decline in the year in which you're going to retire. Update your legal documents and policies. Make sure you have your power of attorneys in place, your wills, your PODs, TODs, beneficiaries, and so forth. All of these can make sure that you have things properly situated the way that you want them to, and design your portfolio for the income that you may need during your retirement, particularly maybe if you're going to retire early before you receive a pension or early before you start receiving Social Security. All of this goes into planning about your retirement. So these are the beginning stages, and when we come back after the commercial break, we're going to talk about considerations of moving to a retirement community. So stay with us. You're listening to Money Talks here on WAKR.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back as we take a look of a lot of people in retirement make a decision to move to a retirement community. Many retirees choose to move to an age-restricted active adult communities where they can live out the remaining years surrounded by golf courses, swimming pools, organized activities, and perhaps most importantly, other retirees. Many people are drawn by the appeal of living in a safe, leisure-focused environment that is isolated from many of life's realities, such as rush hour, traffic jams, undesirable neighborhoods, and families with children. Although many active adult communities are located in warmer states, such as Florida, Arizona, and the Carolinas, they may be found throughout the United States and in some foreign countries. While the lifestyle and amenities that age-restricted adult communities offer are a good fit for many retirees, these places are not for everybody. If you are considering moving to a retirement community, here are some questions you should consider before you put your house on the market and start packing. Will you enjoy living in a remote, self-contained community? Most retirement developments are located on the outer edges of cities in rural areas. If most of the entertainment options you hope to enjoy are offered on site, this probably won't be a problem. But if you plan to attend concerts and theater, visit museums, dine in restaurants, and avail yourself of many of the other things that a larger city has to offer, the drive into town may be too long. Also consider whether your shopping needs can be met on site or within a reasonable distance. Will you prefer to be surrounded by other retirees, or would you rather stay in the mainstream? This is a highly personal choice, and there's no wrong answer. Arguably, surrounding yourself with people of different ages will keep you better connected with what's going on in the world and can enable you to stay younger at heart. Will you fit in? When you visit potential communities that you may retire to, notice the demographic characteristics of the residents. Many communities tend to be basically the same when it comes to religion, political views, and socioeconomic classes. If you are a minority of any type, try to determine if there are other residents like you and how welcoming the residents seem to be towards diverse people. Is the community well maintained? The overall appearance of the community and the first impression you can get can tell you a lot about how well the community is being run and whether they have sufficient operating funds to keep up with maintenance. What are the rules, and can you live with them? Almost all planned retirement communities are governed by a homeowners association. The HOA has rules which apply to many aspects of your residential experience, such as what pets you can own, how you can decorate the exterior of your home, and how long younger guests may visit. Ask for a copy of the covenants, conditions, and restrictions, and read them thoroughly. How much is the HOA fee, and what does it cover? The monthly fee that you pay to live in a community may be high, but a lot depends on what you will get for your money. The HOA fee includes your share of the most common areas' maintenance, the community's employees, insurance, and property taxes, to name a few. You should find out what other services the fees cover, such as utilities, trash collection, cable, and internet. Try to assess whether you will be paying for amenities and services you probably won't use. For example, if you're not a golfer, you may not want to live in a community that features golf courses. Who owns the amenities? While a community is still being built, the amenities such as the activity center and the golf course are usually owned by the developer. When the development reaches a certain percentage of completion, ownership will transfer to the HOA. Try to learn whether this transfer has taken place, and if not, whether the process is clearly defined in writing. This can be tricky and potentially a contentious period in the life of a retirement community. Is the HOA in good financial shape? Ask to see the HOA's financial statements for the past year or two. Determine whether the HOA has a reasonable budget and how well they perform compared to the budget. Items to look for include whether the HOA maintains sufficient reserve funds, rather, and how much they impose assessments, and whether they have a problem with delinquent payments from residents. If the community has a lot of vacancies and foreclosures, those homeowners probably aren't paying their fees, and the financial health of the HOA will suffer. Also try to determine how much HOA fees have increased in the past years. Is the HOA well managed? asked to see the minutes from the HOA meetings for the last year, as well as other communications from the HOA board and community staff to the residents, such as newsletters or the website. From these documents, you can assess the general health of the community. You can tell whether the HOA board is running the community in a disciplined, responsible manner, or if they are constantly dealing with complaints and problems. You can assess whether the general tone of the communication is upbeat or whether residents are frequently being admonished with reminders of what they cannot do. Find out whether the HOA board is comprised of residents or people who are affiliated with the developer. And are your prospective neighbors happy? Try to talk to several people who live in each retirement community you are considering. Ask them what they like most about living there and what they could improve. Try to determine whether they are happy and how the community is being operated and if they have any complaints. Ask if they get along well with their neighbors. If you are concerned about whether you'll fit in, pay close attention to how they treat you. So it's a very multifaceted decision. There's a lot that goes into making a responsible and prudent decision. A little bit of homework can make it so that your retirement is an enjoyable period. And it's time for another commercial break. And when we come back, it's time for the joke of the week. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is the time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week. And this week, Bob and Betty were out driving one night when they were stopped by a policeman. He comes up to the car and says to Bob, "You were speeding." "Oh, geez," he says, "I didn't realize it." "You did too," said Betty. "I told you 2 miles back that you were going too fast." "Be quiet," he says to her. "You also have a broken taillight and you're not wearing your seatbelt. I'm going to have to cite you for those too," says the officer. "I told you," says Betty. Well, by now, Bob was infuriated with his wife and snaps, "Shut up." "Does he always talk to you like that, ma'am?" asked the police officer. "Well," Betty replied, "yes, only when he's drinking." Great life, huh? Anyway, another consideration, and this is not just for retirees, but really for any age group out there, how exercise literally makes you richer. Now, you may think that getting healthier and fitter means shelling out big butts for leaner cuts of meat, organic produce, and a gym membership that tacks on all sorts of hidden fees. But being active can yield financial benefits in addition to the expected health and performance gains. First, consider that living a more physically active and healthy lifestyle doesn't have to break the bank at the outset. For example, many fitness facilities offer discounted rates for businesses that buy memberships in bulk. Your health insurance provider may do the same, so be sure to talk to your employer and explore all options before choosing which gym to join. To cut costs even further, you could forego a gym membership and make a one-time investment in some simple equipment to use at home. Pairing a yoga mat, stability ball, some resistance bands with some free online videos may be all you need to get started. Heck, you don't even need equipment to get fit. Try walking, cycling, hiking, or swimming in your community. Just do a quick internet search to find a quick group activity that suits your needs. If you can't find one, start your own. Having friends and neighbors on board will substantially increase your chances of sticking with an exercise program, so the first step toward achieving your fitness goals may be as simple as inviting some neighbors to meet you for a walk before work or after dinner. Besides all the ways that you can save money getting fit right away, living a healthier lifestyle can have long-term financial benefits. Here are some of the potential monetary gains. Boosted productivity at work or school. Research finds that people who exercise at least 3 times a week are more productive and miss fewer work days than their less active counterparts. That means if you're active, you're more likely to enjoy a long, well-paying career with plenty of promotions. Indeed, studies show that regular exercisers even earn more money on average than their sedentary coworkers. 6% more for men, 10% more for women. You don't even have to be in the workforce yet or still in the workforce to benefit from exercise's effects on productivity. Service cost savings. Before or being more active around the house can save you money on services like house cleaning, yard work, and gardening. The savings from doing your own chores adds up quickly, as do the calories you burn incorporating physical activity into your daily routine. Lower transportation costs. If you add more active transportation, walking or cycling, for example, into your lifestyle whenever possible, you'll see the gains in several ways. Walking your kids or grandkids to school in the morning, cycling to the grocery store if you need a few items on Saturday afternoon, or even running part of the way to work each day will save gas, money, and parking fees, and maybe even car insurance costs. Remember, every minute you spend moving instead of sitting on the couch or in the car is another step toward better health. Smaller health care bills. The list of conditions that physical activity can help treat or even prevent, from diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, and osteoporosis to anxiety, depression, and stress-related illness, is seemingly endless. The expense associated with any of these conditions is massive. Consider office copays, prescription costs, medical devices, lost work time, increased cost of insurance coverage, and so on. Why wouldn't you want to prevent or treat these through exercise and proper nutrition? If you're still not convinced, considering the following statistics from Men's Health IQ, an insurance company that incentivizes healthy behaviors. Physical activity or physically active, health-conscious people have 47% lower risk of all-cause mortality. Cyclists have a 45% reduction in cancer incidence. Weightlifters have an 80% reduction in depression. Runners see a 45% reduction in cardiovascular mortality. Triathletes have a 40% lower risk of cancer mortality. Swimmers see a 10% decrease in total LDL bad cholesterol. Tennis players have a 50% lower risk of all-cause mortality. Avid hikers have a 31% lower risk of cardiovascular mortality. And athletes who perform high-intensity interval training have a 53% lower risk of all-cause mortality. Other research has found, on average, a person who walks or otherwise exercises for 150 minutes each week spends $2,500 a year less on medical expenses than those who fail to reach that threshold. This dollar amount equates to the savings drawdown from fewer doctor visits, emergency room visits, and incidents of hospitalization, as well as lower prescription costs. So basically, it is to everyone's advantage to exercise, because not only do you gain benefits of being able to do things longer, better, more enjoyably, less pain, you also are going to be richer by saving money and spending less money on things that you normally would for people who don't exercise. It is also in many studies over the past 5 to 7 years have also indicated it does not matter when you start. Literally, if you have been sedentary for 70 years and begin to exercise, you will notice benefits immediately and it will increase your longevity. The longer and the more that you participate in your new exercise program, the more you're going to lower the probability of things such as diabetes and cardiovascular and so forth. It is never too late. And just the ability to be able to get out of bed without aches and pains, or to be able to walk and have a nice conversation with your significant other or children or grandchildren, just to be able to be active. Because it doesn't matter how much money you have. You could have all the money in the world, and if you don't have good health, it doesn't matter, because you can't do anything with the money. So please, everybody out there listening, I've always been a big proponent of exercise. I can't tell you the benefits that I've received from it, just physically and mentally, let alone the money aspect of it. For everybody, even walking 3 days a week will make a huge difference in your life. Please consider it. And with that, it's time to get to the phone lines for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week. 330-370-1590 is the number into the studio. 330-370-1590. I'm going to ask you three multiple choice questions. For being our contestant, of course, you automatically win breakfast at Bob Evans. If you get all three questions right, we'll move you into the bonus round. One additional question. If you get that one right, you win yourself a second breakfast at Bob Evans. 330-370-1590. We're going to take caller number four, and we'll be right back.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back to Money Talks. It's time for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week. And it looks like we have Charlie from Talmadge on the line. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Rick.
How are you doing today?
Well, thank you.
Hey, when are we going to get some nice weather?
Well, this is better than what it's been.
That's true. That's true.
For a normal winter, about a foot and a half less in snow so far?
The lack of snow, I think, has been welcomed by most out there, huh? And certainly as we get through March here, it looks like spring can be just around the corner.
Well, I believe you're right.
Charlie, my first question for you today, with the Feds raising the rates this week, what is the current prime rate? Is it 3.5%, 3.75%, or 4%? With the Feds,
I don't have a clue.
Okay.
I'll go for the middle one.
3.75? Well, that's what it was up until Wednesday.
Actually, it's 4.
Yes. Now it's 4%.
Okay.
As you see with the prime rate, it does affect all of us. You know, the variable rates on credit cards go up. Variable rates on home equity loans go up. Car loans go up. Mortgage rates go up. But certainly we are a far cry from our historic averages. So 4%. Is the current prime rate now with the Feds raising the rates. My next question
for... Well, that takes the pressure off.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Because now you don't have to worry. Which of the following is the lowest interest rate today, Charlie? Would that be a 15-year fixed mortgage rate, a 48-month new car loan rate, or a home equity line of credit interest rate? Which of those has the lowest rate today?
Well, I'm going to go with the car.
That would be absolutely correct. The average 48-month new car loan today is 3.32%. 15-year mortgage is 3.4%. and home equity line of credit is 4.88%. Nicely done. And my last question for you is, which of the following has the lowest tax rate? Would it be collectibles held for 2 years or longer, a short-term capital gain, or a long-term capital gain? Which of those has the lowest tax rate?
What are collectibles?
Collectibles would be like gold, silver, baseball cards, coins, and the like. Collectibles. Art, cars.
Okay. Well, what would be the lowest one? I think the last one.
Long-term capital gains?
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely correct. Long-term capital gains. Because for some people, depending on your income, those long-term capital gains could actually be taxed at a 0% interest rate. But and the difference between long-term and short-term, anything held less than a year is short-term. Anything held over a year is long-term. And that makes a big difference because short-term, of course, are going to be added as ordinary income rates. So big difference there. Well, 2 out of 3, Charlie. Not bad.
Not
bad at all. And, of course, we're going to send you out your card for breakfast at Bob Evans.
Well, I thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome, sir.
You've got a good helper there this morning, Tyler.
Yes.
Doing a nice job.
Well, thank you. I'm sure he appreciates that.
Thank you, Charlie.
You're welcome.
All right, sir. You have a great weekend and say hello to your wife, and we'll talk to you soon.
And I will. Thank you very much, guys.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And as a senior citizen, a retired individual, a mature adult, whatever terminology you want to give to it, do you think you still need good credit or not? Well, by the time you retire, you have probably been building your credit score for decades. In fact, senior citizens tend to have the best credit scores of any generation, according to the Credit Reporting Bureau, Experian. But while this time in your life is meant for relaxation, that doesn't mean that you can completely let down your guard regarding credit. Good credit is important throughout your adult life, including in your later years. Here's some reasons why. Are you going to downsize or move to a different location? Maybe you want to relocate to a warmer climate or an area that's closer to the family. Or you could decide to save money in house cleaning effort by downsizing to a smaller home. Well, unless you pay cash for your new place, you will need to apply for a mortgage. The better your credit, the better the chance you have of qualifying for the lowest mortgage rates. Even if you decide to rent a property, whether it's your primary residence or a vacation home, you will need good credit. Most landlords run credit checks to lower the risk that they will end up with tenants who can't pay on time every month. Getting the best credit card. For many older Americans, retirement is a time to travel. A good travel rewards credit card is a great tool for saving money on your dream vacation. You'll earn points for your regular spending on the card and often bonus points for travel expenses, which you can eventually cash in for free flights and hotel stays. Plus, most airline cards come with perks such as free checked bags, trip cancellation insurance, and free rental car insurance. A good credit score gives you access to top-tier rewards cards. Those premium programs can make a serious dent in the cost of frequent trips. If you're the type who likes to stick closer to home, cashback credit cards can help defray the cost of everyday expenses. As long as you pay off your balance in full every month and don't spend more than you normally would just to earn points, you should come out ahead with the rewards card. Plus, credit cards come with more consumer protections than debit cards. That can be especially important for older consumers who are often targeted by fraudsters. Zero liability policies mean that you aren't responsible for any fraudulent charges on your credit card as long as you quickly report suspicious activity to your card issuer. Embarking on a second career? Well, many seniors, retirement doesn't mean leaving the workforce altogether. If you want to get a part-time job, switch careers, or start a business, A bad or lapsed credit record could create hurdles. Some employers check credit reports for job applicants. So do small business lenders and even some business suppliers. A strong credit history helps assure that you are responsible. Entering assisted living and nursing home care. No one likes to think about it, but there comes a time when you need to move into a facility that provides access to medical care. Assisted living facilities and nursing homes are expensive, and they don't take Medicare for long-term stays. Managers of the facilities will want to see that you can make timely payments for your care, and a good credit score helps convince them. A bad credit score could keep you from being approved to live there. How do you maintain your good credit score? It's easy to let your credit record lapse if you don't have any outstanding loans. One simple way to keep your record active is by actively using a credit card and paying the bill on time every month, even if it's just for small expenses, such as a tank of gas or load of groceries. If you fail to use a card, the issuer will eventually deem it inactive and close the account, damaging your credit score. It's also important to check your credit record once a year. Annualcreditreport.com is the official place to go and check all three reporting agencies to make sure that your credit score is the way that it should be. Well, another show has come to an end, and it's been a great pleasure to share the past hour with you. We always welcome the opportunity at Capital Financial Group to work with you as your personal financial advisor. Let us help you to eliminate the worry that comes with retirement planning, comes with rolling over your 401k or 403b, of setting up a portfolio, of managing those investments, of looking at income that is needed, and the like. I also want to make a reference here that next week on the show, I have a special announcement to make, and hope that everybody listening will be here next week to listen to what that announcement is. With that, give us a call, though, at Capital Financial Group. Our number is 330-668-6991. That's 330-668-6991. Thanks so much for having us in today, and we'll see you next Saturday at 7 right here on Money Talks. Have a great week.
Has been Money Talks with Richard Peterson, President of Capital Financial Group. This program is informational only and should not replace a financial consultation before investing your money. Registered financial advisors are key toward a balanced and responsible financial policy. This has been a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its parent company, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.